First Lady Jeanette Walker took part in Governor Scott Walker's State of the State speech in January to talk about the Fostering Futures program. Wisconsin, I asked the First Lady to talk about that program. So we're at the residence. Thank you very much. Appreciate
Welcome.
It. Fostering Futures was so important to you that you felt you had to address the whole world. So this must speak to how important it is to you. Can you talk about its importance to you?
Well, it's really my main initiative and really has become my passion and really my love for children and families to really heal and get and really kind of prosper in life. And so it was very important. So when Scott came to me and asked me to speak, you know, it's not something that I love to do. It doesn't come as easy for me as it does for him. And so it was important for me to, you know, he asked me, and I wasn't asking him if I could do it. He really came to me and said, really, could you do this for me? And of course, I said yes.
Why do you think it could offer such a critical difference in the lives of children?
Well, really, Fostering Futures is getting at the root of the problem. It's really kind of really bringing healing to families and hope to people. And so I think that it's really important that we get that message out each and every day, that we can change lives. And
it's not a program. Perhaps it's a philosophy. So maybe that's a better way to describe it. So why don't you give us a short version of Fostering Futures, please?
Well, you're right. It's not a program. It's not a magic pill that we can give anyone. So after someone learns about ACEs, which are traumatic experiences that we as people, maybe.
I looked it up.
Yeah.
Adverse childhood experiences.
Right.
Excuse me.
Right.
ACEs.
So if you experience four or more ACEs in life, the chances of you really having something that might slow you down, whether it be not being able to hold a job, or maybe you might have health conditions that maybe other people might not have if they have ACEs in their life. And so really what we need to do is make people aware of ACEs, and then what we do is teach them trauma-informed care, which is really listening to their story, figuring out how we can help them at their level instead of being this blank picture for a blank kind of prescription for everyone. And so I think that trauma-informed care, like I said, gets at the root of the problem.
Right.
And that's where we can make real change happen.
Well, I know you've been active in this program for a few years. So who has been trained in Fostering Futures and trauma-informed
Well, there
questions.
There is a lot of training going on all over our state, all over the country. I started this in 2011, and so for us, we've been at this for 5.5 years. Right now, Fostering Futures, we're looking at county agencies state agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So we have 14 county agencies, state agencies, all in a partnership with Fostering Futures and the National Council on Behavioral Health. And they're in a 2-year pilot program, kind of looking at themselves, turning the mirror towards themselves and say, what kind of agency are we? Are we a trauma-informed care agency? So that they can learn to better take care of themselves and the people that they work with. So for us, we want everyone trained. We want everyone from the bus driver all the way to the superintendent of the schools trained. And it's happening. It's if you really take a look at that, and you can see good work being done all over the state and all over the country.
The key to it, from my research, is discovering what a child's behavior means and then responding with what he or she needs. Is that an accurate definition, First Lady?
I think it's a really good definition, because before we might have had a way of treating a child that's in foster care.
Yeah.
Maybe with some great guidelines, great things to keep them safe, things to make sure that their needs are met. What we really want to know is we want to know how we take care of them totally as a person, not only just the safety and their needs, but, you know, what's your story? What happened to you? It's not what's wrong with you. You know, it's what happened to you in life. And so a young baby going into foster care, young little newborn, maybe 3 months old, whatever, you kind of say to yourself, what do they need? They just need a warm bed, a nice foster parent to take care of them, feed them, rock them when they need to be rocked. But what we want is when you bring them across, you know, when we bring them from their home to someone else's home, we want the same laundry detergent to be used, because we know that senses and really kind of the same kind of feeling that we need to keep that. We don't want to commit, we don't want to cause more harm to a child. That's not the point. It's to really kind of make the transition from their home to their foster home a good, smooth transition without any harm, any more harm being done.
Do you think some of these caseworkers and social workers in the past, decades ago, have gotten it wrong? In other words, not taking the time to ask, okay, what? Why are you acting out? Why are you not having ability to cooperate? So it's, are you trying to reverse the paradigm here?
No, I don't think they got it wrong at all. I think this is the knowledge that we know now. Okay. This is what we know now. And what we have to do is we have to do the best that we can do with what we know. And what we know is trauma-informed care works. And so if a young child is in school and he's acting out and the teacher's upset with him every day and they don't know what to do with him, so they're sending him off to the, you know, the out in the hallway to sit or sending them to the principal's office all the time, we know that maybe that doesn't work for this child. So we want to train the teachers and the social workers and everyone else to ask the question, you know, what happened last night? It's not, oh, you're naughty because you don't have your homework. It's, what's going on? What's going on at home? And then we, you know, when we listen to the story, we find out what's going on. Maybe his father's incarcerated. Maybe there's drug abuse in the home. Maybe there's, you know, domestic abuse. We don't know unless we ask. And when we ask, we get the whole picture. And I think that that's what's so special about ACEs and trauma-informed care. And we also know that with ACEs, the brain is actually, it's different. It's it doesn't learn the same way. It might not be able to take in information the same way. Everything's not clicking the way it should be. And so what we know is that we have to look at those people, children, adults, and figure out the best way to be able to make them thrive and to learn. And so it's a wonderful kind of, I don't want to say new because it's been around for about 20 years, but I think what's happened, it's coming to the surface, and it's exciting, and it's just a new way to treat people and children that live in toxic stress. Sorry, I want to get that toxic stress in there because it's very important.
Right. I'm going to use a personal example. I volunteer at a third grade Madison Elementary, and some of the stories I hear about food insecurity, safety insecurity, home insecurity. Where can somebody like me, I just volunteer, get trained in trauma-informed care? How can I get better at responding to what I hear from some of the third graders?
Yeah, and that's what we want. Someone like yourself who's wants to be a good volunteer, wants to really see these children prosper. There is a website with the state. It's called children.wi.gov.
And say it again.
Children.wi.gov.
Thank you.
And it's a map, and you can go over the map, and you can see what's happening in your area, in your community. So it really breaks it down for Madison area. If you want to know who's training on trauma-informed care, who's doing what work in your area, okay, who's using ACEs and trauma-informed care, you can find out. It's wonderful. It's a great place to go to find out what you can do to help your community.
What should be the initial response of someone like me or a bus driver who hears, who goes, who asks the tough question, why are you having a bad day? And gets the individual shares. What should be the initial response of someone who hears the sad, potential tragic story of a child?
Well, obviously empathy is good, but I think think about yourself. You're volunteering with the third grader and he's kind of just distracted. He just won't read. You're like, you're thinking to yourself, I'm wasting my time. I don't want to be here. I'm giving up my hour of this time. I could be at the gym. I could be having a coffee. I could whatever. But you're there because you know you want to make a difference. And you're kind of chit-chatting with him. He tells your story. Yeah, well, and he probably doesn't want to tell you his story, but you're getting around to
it. I had one child who wouldn't even sit down. Walk around the class, hide under the... I'm sorry.
No, but we want your response to say, he's not naughty.
Okay.
He's not trying to disrupt you. And there might be one. I mean, there might be some. I don't want to say that nobody ever is good or bad or naughty or whatever, because there's consequences to trauma-informed care. We still have to treat people and the behavior that they have, but we just have to do it in a different way. And so if you now you say, oh, so he kind of finally admits, you know, I didn't get any sleep last night.
Right.
My dad was, you know, home and he was drinking and he was fighting with my mom and I didn't get any sleep and, you know, I don't want to read today. I just don't want to. And he might not say all of that.
Yeah.
He might not get all of that out of it. But I can't believe that your opinion of him is not changed. Now
I see he or she in a new light.
Yes.
How far can I go in trying to? Well, I hear you saying my first obligation is to listen and to ask the question, why are you having a bad day? And then when I get the story, then I've engaged the child, but how far can I go in trying to? I don't have the ability to fix that problem.
No, and I don't think it's our responsibility to fix every problem. It's our responsibility to realize or have empathy for that child instead of, you know, I'm not coming back. If I get Johnny again and I'm not coming back because he won't read with me. You know, or maybe he's not reading with you because maybe last year he had a lot of toxic stress last year in his life, and it was second grade or first grade, and that's when they learned to read. So maybe he can't really read on the same level as the other children. So you might think to yourself, you know what, I'm going to think of a different way to teach him how to read this book.
Okay.
We're gonna sit here, we're going to talk, I'm going to show pictures, we're going to play games. I mean, I don't know, I'm not a social worker, so I'm sure that a social worker could probably be here, sitting here, and give you millions of examples, or even a teacher could give you millions of examples of how to treat that child. Our point is to make people realize that there's a story behind this child. There's a reason. Toxic stress, and that's where you live in it day in and day out. It's really something that changes the way you think, how healthy you are, those kinds of things. That's where we're at. That's where we're going.
And some of these ACE, adverse childhood experiences, abuse, loss of a parent, neglect, living with someone with substance abuse, living with criminal activity, living with domestic abuse. So these are the types of things that if people ask, why are you having a bad day, they can hear. So my question is, do I have any obligation as a volunteer in a third grade class to call any official's attention if it might put the child or a person in that home in danger?
Well, always. We just as citizens or good neighbors should always, if you feel that the child is in danger or there's some harm going to be done to him or someone else. But it's a slippery slope. I mean, it's hard. I'm sure as a volunteer, I think if I were the volunteer,
yes,
I would maybe mention to the teacher,
okay,
you know, this is what I heard today. I don't know if this is the root of the cause, but, you know, it sounds like Johnny might have some kind of toxic stress going on at home.
Okay.
But you know, those things that you read off are not the only things that could really bring toxic stress is something that happens reoccurring over and over and over again. It's not just one night there was an argument in my home. That's not toxic stress. This is the child that lives in toxic stress each and every day, or anyone who lives in toxic stress.
And the toll of toxic stress, based on the research, is you can be more likely to be a smoker, more likely to be an alcoholic, more likely to inject street drugs, more likely to commit suicide. So unless there's, well, is the term intervention valid in this process, First Lady?
Well, we don't do interventions. So I wouldn't go there.
Okay.
I don't know if I can really, I don't call it an intervention. I really don't. I wouldn't think that trauma-informed care for us and the work that we're doing at Fostering Futures is an intervention. I've heard it called that. I've heard people talk about it. It's similar to what we try to do. But we really, truly aren't having an intervention with someone.
Trying to listen,
yes,
right? And being a better responder.
Hear the story.
Is there an ideal age range for children where this can be most effective?
4 to 9 or something like this, or 6 to 12. Have you heard any studies like that?
You know, there might be something out there. For us at Fostering Futures, we don't care what age you are. We want to hear your story, no matter whether you're... we'd love to catch a child when they're younger, because obviously we know with anything success, we can get them in there younger and start teaching, or not even teaching, but treating a child and family that's in the welfare system early on, uh-huh. instead of catching them older in as a teenager, as an adult. But I think that when, even an adult, I know for what we do at Fostering Futures, even if an adult hears about what ACEs they have,
yes.
and how many, and how it has affected their life, there's this kind of feel, you can see it happening when you're talking to someone. They're like, wow, that's why I haven't held down a job. Maybe that's why I can't stop smoking. Maybe that's why I have diabetes now. I mean, there's so many variables that happen to someone, maybe because they had toxic stress, their brain didn't develop like someone else. And so I don't think there's any magic age. We'd love to catch them young, of course.
I was surprised at this stat, which is probably not surprising to you because you've been doing this since 2011. 60% of Wisconsin residents have at least one ACE, 14% four or more. So that surprised me. Does it surprise you at how widespread ACEs are?
I don't know if I was surprised because I have some ACEs in my background.
Okay.
I wouldn't say four or more, but I have some ACEs, and I never thought of them that way. But, yeah, I mean, it does seem like a... it does seem like a large number, but it happens, you know. And I think we never, it's generational. So if my mom has four ACEs, maybe I'll have four ACEs. So the getting at the root of the problem is what we need to do, so that the next generation only maybe has one ACE, none. And then, of course, we know that, you know, even at that, you could have four ACEs, I could have four ACEs, but if we've had someone in our life that really has been constant,
right.
and really shown that we're worth listening to our story, or really that we're valued, we might never have an issue ever.
And what fascinates me is the first, someone who's been taught this to listen better, listens and then is constant, and then that's a form of psychological help for the child, isn't it?
I would think so, yeah. I would say so, yes.
The issue, one researcher says the goal is to build resilience on the part of the child,
mm-hmm.
so that in the future they can adapt more positively.
Exactly. And what we've known and what we found through what we've studied through Trauma Informed Fostering Futures is that resiliency is the key. We can't change the way the brain looks. Maybe we can't change the mother or the father, but we can teach the child resiliency. And that's what's key. So, or we can teach the caregiver resiliency. Or show them resiliency. I'm not a social worker, so some of the things I don't like line up perfectly. I just know what I feel and what I think, and I know from Fostering Futures and the people that are on this journey with me is that there's hope. There's hope. And there's a way to change somebody having, mom and dad having four ACEs, child having maybe one or two,
mm-hmm.
or none.
So. You go around the state. Do you want to relate any personal stories you've heard that have, maybe just one that broke your heart because
oh, wow.
you did ask that question, why are you having a bad day?
Oh,
any
yeah.
personal story, no names, of course.
Of course not.
But no geography, where it occurred.
You know, there's so many of them, and I'm unfortunately one does not pop in my
okay.
head. But I was just taping the other day for Fostering Futures, and there was a foster mom on, and she was on her that had seven foster children in the last few years, and she said. She's part of Children's Hospital, so I know that she knows about ACEs and trauma-informed care because they train their caregivers on that. And she said to me as I was leaving, she said, could you please work on schools?
Please work on schools.
And I was like, Does that
mean the third grade volunteer like me or the teacher I work with? I don't know.
But I think she meant, you know, like, I know about ACEs. I know about trauma-informed care. Can you now train the teachers and the caregiver and the social workers there and the principal and the administration? And I stopped and I said, you know, that work is going on. It's not everywhere. We don't see it everywhere, but my goal, Fostering Futures' goal, is that everyone in Wisconsin knows about trauma-informed care.
Which was my next question. The universities, the colleges, these specific programs that are educating our next level of social workers and caseworkers, is trauma-informed care being taught to them now?
You know, I don't know specifically where. I did hear, though, that the Medical College of Wisconsin has put together a curriculum for their new doctors. I know a little bit about that. I felt like I talked to a nurse who was teaching at Marquette who said that they had trauma-informed care. So I'm not sure. Let's hope so. That's all I say. Let's hope so. I know that the medical college, I mean, at the university, there's great people doing work on trauma-informed care. So I'm sure if it isn't there yet, it's going to be. But what we need is the teachers to be trained on trauma-informed care. When they come out of school as new teachers would be great.
The skeptic in me has to ask this question. Do you think a child ever over-exaggerates what he or she has been through to try to get attention, best to your knowledge?
Sure. I mean, that's a big, broad kind of yes, of course. I mean, I had two children. I have two sons. I'm sure at some point in their life they exaggerated something. But I think that when we listen to the story and we really get to the root of it, it's not all exaggeration. In their mind, that's what they see. You know, perception is reality. So, of course, I mean, you know that, I don't know. A social worker, I don't know.
I've got nine grandchildren, so I think I know the answer too.
Oh, yeah, right? It's like...
What major progress have you made working on trauma-informed care since 2011?
Wow. Well, we have done so much. In the beginning, we started out with three communities that were our core pilot kind of programs that we were not, I don't want to call it a program, but so we had these three core groups. One was the Menominee Tribe, and they are on fire there. They are doing amazing things. They have incorporated it in all that they do. They have incorporated it in their schools. They're with the help from the state and Fostering Futures, they're doing amazing work. Right now, we are training 14 county agencies, seven state government agencies. So all of the children and families are using trauma-informed care. We have DWD. We have Veterans Affairs are working with trauma-informed care. So there are state agencies that are incorporating this. And so then there's pockets of other things that we've done all along the way. We've trained the Boys and Girls Club in Milwaukee. We do training. We try to get the word out whenever we can. So I think we're doing some good.
The person who said get it in the schools, is that the next area that you wanted expanded?
Well, I know that the department...
Is it in the schools?
Well, the Department of Public Instruction is working very hard to get it in the schools. I know they have a program. I met with someone yesterday who is from the Hope Center, and they are going to be working on getting it into the schools. So, again, it's like everywhere else in the state, there's pockets of it everywhere. What we need to do is now all come together, and we need to really kind of not only do the caregivers and the foster parents and the social workers know about it, but the bus driver, the volunteer at the school, and that takes a while to get that message out.
So is that your vision for the next, you've been working on this for 6 years, your vision for the next 6 years is what?
My vision for the next 6 years is that everyone in Wisconsin is trauma-informed. So that would be mine. And that not only that, but that we have healthier families, healthier children, that we see some success in 6 years.
Does fostering futures work into the governor's goals, as he's announced both in the State of the State and the budget, of welfare reform and rewarding work?
Oh, Scott is really passionate, like I am, about trauma-informed care. He actually knew about it before I did.
He did.
So when I came to him, he totally knew about it. Whether he was going to really do as much work with trauma-informed care, I'm not sure. But I know that after this time, he has to hear it from me all the time about it. And whatever he's doing, I always say, well, is that trauma-informed? Will that work? Will this worker have access to the services that they need to really hold down a job? It's one thing to get a job. Right. It's another thing to keep it.
Okay. And where can somebody watching this interview get more information on Fostering Futures or trauma-informed care?
Well, I have Fostering Futures has a website. So it's fosteringfutureswisconsin.org.
Thank you.
And then we have the state agency, which is children.wisconsin.gov.
And then finally, you've been working on this for 6 years. What have you learned about the changes in people's, in children's lives that this program can achieve?
Wow, what have I learned in the last 6 years? I think I've learned to listen. There is a story. There is something going on. It's not just that they're bad or good, you know, good child, bad child. Smart child, not smart child, you know, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. There's something else going on. And so I think I've learned to listen. I've learned that, I've also learned that keep at it. If someone tells you no, just keep going. Because I know it's right. I know it's the right thing. I personally know, and I know it's proven that it's right. ACEs has proven trauma-informed care will work. And so I'm just going to keep at it.
What I've learned, when I see, as a volunteer, a child that's having a bad day, you go back the next week and that child is having a good day. So this is all part of the yin and yang of youth, isn't it, ma'am?
Yeah, it's the one that has a bad day every week that you see him that we're looking for.
Yes.
Because kids have bad days all the time. ACEs, no ACEs, something is not lining up right, and so they're kind of like off. But we're looking for the child that has a bad day every week, I think.
And this can make a big difference, can't it?
It can.
First Lady Tanette Walker, thank you so much for talking about fostering futures and trauma-informed care.
Thank you.
Thank you.